WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Robert Zemeckis and Steven Spielberg have gotten the third installment of Back to the Future out in record time, less than a year after Back to the Future 2. Guest film critic Owen Gleiberman wonders if they've gone Back to the Future one time too many.
Director Robert Zemeckis must have felt exhausted from all that hurtling back and forth along the space-time continuum that Michael J. Fox did in Back to the Future Part 2. In Back to the Future Part 3, Zemeckis simply plops down Marty McFly and Doc Brown in the Old West and leaves them there. This last installment in the series is also the first dud. More than anything, it recalls all those baby boomer sitcoms like Bewitched and The Partridge Family that featured an Old West episode. The movie trots out all the campy cliches. Cowboys gallop through Monument Valley to the beat of thumping Ponderosa music. Marty's nemesis, the bullying Biff Tannen, shows up as Mad Dog Tannen, a black-hatted gunslinger who fires bullets at Marty's feet and makes him dance. There are agitated Indians, a square dance, and a climactic shootout that's a dim retread of spaghetti westerns. As parody, this stuff was all done to death years ago on Bugs Bunny and in Blazing Saddles. This time, Marty McFly is more of a bystander. It's Doc who's the main character. He's seen his tombstone in the future, and now he's trying to change the course of history to avoid being shot and killed. He also falls in love with a pretty schoolmarm, played by Mary Steenburgen.
Emmett, do you think we'll ever be able to travel to the moon the way we travel across the country on trains?
Definitely. Although not for another 84 years and not on trains. We'll have space vehicles, capsules settle off with rockets, devices that create giant explosions. Explosions so powerful that they
They break the pull of the Earth's gravity and send the projectile through outer space. Emmett! I read that book, too. You're quoting Jules Verne, From the Earth to the Moon.
You've read Jules Verne.
I adore Jules Verne.
So do I.
Christopher Lloyd is a very funny character actor, but he's best in small doses. He wears out his welcome here, especially when the movie treats us to endless scenes of Doc Brown's ranting metaphysics. The truth is, there's barely a spark of life left in this material. Back to the Future 3 doesn't have a trace of the cross-generational urgency that made the original Back to the Future a pop classic. And it lacks the manic invention that made Part 2 fitfully entertaining, if overwrought. The movie's time travel logic also seems shakier than ever. After all, if Doc's tombstone says he died in 1885, how could he have ever invented the time machine that first brought him back to 1885? Oh well, the Planet of the Apes sequels never made much sense either. Here, though, the slipshod plotting results from Zemeckis desperately trying to end the series with an upbeat message. The first Back to the Future was rigorously deterministic. It held fast to the idea that one tiny event could alter your destiny, for better or worse. Part 3 is full of sappy homilies about how the future is what you make it. In other words, as long as you try hard enough, everything will turn out just fine. With this film, Robert Zemeckis continues his depressing transition from movie maker to glorified mechanic. Back to the Future 3 will probably gross $150 million at the box office, but the magic of this series is long gone, and so is the fun.
Owen Gleiberman is film critic for Entertainment Weekly.